A couple of weeks ago, we were introduced to Jacob and his family, and we hear the story about how Jacob tricks his twin brother Esau out of his birthright. And then, a week later, I don't know how long it was, but like last week, we heard about the story of how he then steals Esau's blessing by tricking their dad. Now, of course, Esau doesn't want to take this lying down. He holds a very intense grudge. In fact, this grudge is an extreme grudge. And Jacob is in the crosshairs, and Esau's planning to kill him. And then mom steps in, and she warns Jacob about it and says, "Listen, you better go lay low for a while. I'll call you back when the dust settles." Sadly, that never happens. And so Isaac sends one of his sons, Jacob, away. Now, he does it under the pretext of, Jacob needing to go find a good Hebrew girl to make his mom happy. But everybody knows about this dark cloud hanging over the family. And that's where we get to the passage that we're going to be looking at today. We're going to pick up in verse 10. Jacob left Beersheba, and he set out to Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. And taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head, and he lay down to sleep. Jacob leaves home. He's a fugitive. He's alone, and he's empty-handed. The only thing that he has going for him is this seemingly empty blessing that was really meant for somebody else, but he got it because of his own deceit. And so after a day on the run, Jacob stops for the night, and the dark night sky is a good counterpoint to the darkness in his own soul, and he lays down with only a rock for comfort, and he falls asleep alone. Now, something that jumped out at me last week while I was listening to Jason preach, Jacob really didn't have any real use for God at this point in time. When he's pretending to be Esau, he brings the tasty stew to his dad, and his dad said, "How did you get this so quickly? I thought it would take longer." And in chapter 27, verse 20, Jacob says something I think is very telling. He says, "Well, the Lord your God gave me a successful hunt." The Lord your God. I get the impression that these boys, they grew up around God. Jacob learned about him. And because his grandpa and dad were Isaac and Abraham, God loomed really large in his life. But he never has experienced God. Jacob has never had a personal encounter with God. Now, a lot of us have grown up in Christian families, and you know what I'm talking about, right? You know all too well how easy it is to get up and go through the religious motions and never really meet the God behind those motions. That was Jacob. Disinterested, really, in anything that his dad's God could have to offer to him. Jacob lived life on his own terms. And with the help of his mother, he becomes a failure, a flop, a fiasco. And now, he's running for his life. He's alone, no hope of redemption, completely by himself. Or is he? Let's look at verse 12. Jacob had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth, and its top reaching to the heavens. And the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And there, beside him, stood the Lord. Jacob, you're not alone. I'm the Lord, King of the universe. See my royal messengers moving up and down, to and fro, doing my bidding. My heavenly kingdom, Jacob, is on the move still. and it's with you. I looked at a lot of art this week as I was thinking about this message, and the picture you're looking at right now, I think, best captures this idea of God being with Jacob. Like, if you look carefully, you can see that the Lord is with him, and it's almost as if, even though Jacob's asleep, it's almost as if the Lord has him in his arms. This is the story about the launch of Jacob's long journey into exile, but this night is mainly about God making a journey of a mere 18 inches. He's journeying from Jacob's head to his heart. But in order to accomplish this voyage, God needs to open up a portal to heaven, the portal to an encounter, so that Jacob can get real with the King of Heaven. I want us to consider three thoughts about this portal to heaven. And just to let you know, I've gotten inspiration on both sides of my brain for this message. On the left side of my brain, I've got scholar Walter Brueggemann and famous preacher Tim Keller inspiring that side of my brain. And on the right side of my brain, I've got the paintings of a guy named Richard McBee, a Jewish artist, who provided a lot of the images that you're going to see here this morning. So let's start with the first thought. Heaven's portal comes at God's initiative. And I want to nerd out on the Bible here for just a second. All right, Jacob is experiencing something opening up to him. It's called a stairway or a ladder from heaven. And this is an obvious hyperlink. If you read the book of Genesis carefully, the language makes this an obvious flashback or hyperlink back to another portal or stairway that we discover in Genesis 11. And that portal was built by human hands. We call it the Tower of Babel. And if I were to draw this as a Venn diagram for you, what's a portal to heaven? Well, if you have like two circles, one circle represents earth, the other represents heaven, the Venn diagram would have them overlap. When that happens, that's a connection. And the ancient Near East, there we go. I said ancient twice. My tongue's getting tied. Anyways, people from that time period, for them, they would use things like temples and sacred high places, and that's for them, in their mind, that is where heaven and earth would overlap. And here we have a comparison of two prime examples of that happening. So when you're talking about the Tower of Babel, this is something that they built it with the purpose of reaching the heavens. Like, the very tippy top of that ziggurat is meant to be like a temple to connect with heaven. And the interesting thing is Jacob's ladder is meant to do the same thing. But there's a big difference here, and that has to do with the initiative. The people of Babel, they were taking the initiative. Let us build this tower that connects us to the heavens. Whereas the imagery of Jacob's dream gives you the impression that this is a ladder that's coming down and it's resting on the earth, but it's coming from God. And the interesting is the parallels and contrasts of the results that come out of this. Of course, this idea of building a tower to heavens isn't really the right way to go about it. And the result is that the Lord scatters them and he gives them different languages, and the nations are scattered in confusion. Interestingly, God promises Jacob lots of descendants, and they're going to spread out too, to the north, south, east, and west. Only they're going to spread out and be a blessing to the nations, not a confusion to the nations. I think Babel serves as kind of like an archetype for every human effort to reach heaven. It's our human religious impulse to just be reaching towards heaven. And all you have to do is look at the most popular religions today to see that they all have to-do lists to try to do that in that effort to reach. We're all familiar with the Ten Commandments, right? Islam has their five pillars of faith. If you look to Buddhism or Hinduism, they have their eightfold or fourfold path to enlightenment. Sikhism has 5 Ks. Here's the point. Any human effort to reach to God is a Tower of Babel. And just merely performing these efforts doesn't open heaven to anyone. We have here in Jacob's story the template. Only God can open heaven to us. Let's move on to thought number 2. Heaven's portal serves both God and people. It advances both of their causes. When Randall encouraged us to think about that aspect of God that kind of makes your heart skip a beat, I thought about how it is that God likes to partner with people. It seems like right from Genesis 1 on through to the last pages of the Bible, God invites human beings to work together with him. It's just amazing. Let's pick up the story here in verse 13. There beside him, Jacob, stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and east, to the north and south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. So it's here that Jacob finally gets in on the family partnership with God. God has now confirmed the things that he's been confirming with his forefathers all along. Two things in particular, that there will be land for the people of Jacob or Israel, and that Israel was going to be a blessing to the nations. And it's kind of interesting, this particular vision that we see in the picture of Jacob's ladder. You see the city in the background, and then a little closer you see the menorah. It's almost like there's a foreshadowing of just the things that Israel is supposed to represent, that they're supposed to be a priestly blessing to the whole world. And God is now inviting Jacob into this world blessing partnership that he knew that his dad and his grandpa had. But God adds something special to this partnership, something that is especially for Jacob on this first night in exile. Verse 15, I'm with you. I will watch over you wherever you go. I'll bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. Here God promises 3 things that I think are music to the ears of any exile. Anyone who feels alienated or feels alone or desperate for some reason. God says, I am with you. This is the promise of accompaniment. He says, I watch over you. I'll protect you. And I'm going to bring you back. There's going to be a homecoming someday. You're not going to be lonely and desperate and alienated forever. This isn't just a pat on the back to kind of encourage Jacob. You know, oh, there, little guy. Keep your chin up. It's going to be okay. God is partnering with Jacob. Jacob is part of the master plan now. This kind of reminds me of something Jesus said. The night that he was about to be arrested, he's in the upper room with his disciples. They're freaking out because they know something's going to happen. They don't know what, and they're filled with anxiety, and they're scared. And Jesus picks that moment to promote them from servant to friend. Listen to this. A servant doesn't know his master's business. Everything that I've learned from my father, I've made known to you. You didn't choose me. I chose you and I appointed you so that you might go and bear fruit. Fruit that will last. When God opens heaven to us, it's not just to help us, encourage us, get through the day kind of stuff. God opens heaven's portal to include us in the important work that he's doing. We get to be a part of his great plan. the end of the Bible, we read about a new heaven and a new earth. The things that we do to partner with God now actually helps bring that about. That's like, that's a whole another hour of just mind-blowing things to contemplate. So, two thoughts so far. One is, heaven's portal comes to us at God's initiative, not ours. And secondly, heaven's portal serves not just God's agenda, but includes us in that agenda. Here's a third thought. Heaven's portal invites a response. Let's pick up here in verse 16. When Jacob woke up from his sleep, he thought, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I wasn't aware of it." But then he was afraid, and he said, "How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God." That's a euphemism for temple, by the way. This is the gate of heaven. This is the portal of heaven. The first step in responding to heaven's portal for Jacob was recognition. Jacob acknowledges that he had no idea up till now that God was actually with him. But now he can finally see. God of his fathers is with him, has been the whole time. Verse 18. Early the next morning, Jacob took that stone that he had placed under his head, and he set it up as a pillar, and he poured oil on top of it. He called that place Bethel, house of God, though that city used to be called Luz. Jacob's next step is to mark the encounter. He wanted to remember this time. He wanted to remember this place. Eventually, Bethel will become second to Jerusalem as the most significant spiritual city in all of Israel. Then Jacob made a vow saying, "If God is with me and will watch over me on this journey and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I may return safely to my father's household someday, then the Lord will be my God. And this stone that I have set up as a pillar will be God's house. And of all that you give me, Lord, I will give you a tenth." The final step in Jacob's response here is to follow this God who has reached out and opened heaven to him. I have to admit, though, that Jacob's response here, his vow, it's a little iffy. I mean, like, literally, like, there's a lot of ifs. I know that's a lame dad joke, but it's very iffy. If God is with me, if he watches over me, if I return home safely, then you're my God. And it's easy to critique Jacob, isn't it? I mean, think about the reputation he's earned up right now. It's a pretty nasty reputation. He's a schemer and a cheat. But at the same time, this is Jacob's first real conversation he's having with God. And it seems to be okay that it's a little bumpy. This is an awesome, terrifying moment for him. Yet, as Brueggemann reflects, Jacob will be Jacob. Even in this solemn moment, he still sounds like a bargain hunter. But amazingly, God appears to be okay with that. Now, maybe you're like me and you're wondering, well, that's great for Jacob. He gets a fancy portal. He gets the vision. What do I get? How does God initiate portals to heaven today? It doesn't seem like it's God's MO anymore to come up, to come to people in a dream with angels and stairways and crazy visions and stuff. So how will I know that God's reaching out to me? Hold on to those questions. And let's explore something that Jesus said, which, to be honest, never really made sense to me until I studied this story about Jacob. You can look at this story in John chapter 1. In John chapter 1, it's kind of the beginning of Jesus' ministry, and he's busy calling his disciples kind of one by one. And in verse 43, we meet Philip, and Jesus invites him to become one of his disciples. And Philip must have the gift of evangelism because the very first thing that Philip does is he goes and shares this invitation with his brother Nathanael. And Nathanael is curious, and so he goes and meets Jesus too. And during that conversation, it comes out that somehow Jesus miraculously saw Nathanael under a fig tree. This was before they met. And I have no idea what Nathanael was doing under that tree or thinking about under that tree. But the fact that Jesus saw him there really made an impact. Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. And Jesus looks at him and says, Nathanael, you ain't seen nothing yet. Verse 50. You believe because I told you I saw you under the fig tree. You'll see greater things than that. And then he added, very truly I tell you, you will see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending on a ladder? On the Son of Man. Just let that sink in for a minute. You will see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending on me, Jesus. Jesus is equating himself with the portal to heaven. Jesus is the portal to heaven. How does God take the initiative today with the likes of me and you? This is one time where the Sunday school answer fits. Jesus! Jesus is the portal of heaven and he's coming for you. Jesus says that he is the stairway. He is the gate. He's the portal to heaven. He is the way, the truth, and the life. And how do you know when God's reaching out to you? Well, have you ever sensed when Jesus, by his Holy Spirit, is calling out for you? Come and see. Follow me. Go this way. Or maybe it's, I chose you. I appointed you so that you might bear fruit. Fruit that will last. Do you ever sense God reaching out to you in that way? Maybe you feel that right now. Tim Keller provides some helpful applications, and I want to share them with you. And then we're going to conclude. The first thing that this story really reveals to us is that any place can be a portal to heaven. God works anywhere and everywhere he chooses. Jesus told Nicodemus, the Spirit of God blows wherever it pleases. God can initiate heaven's portal anywhere, at any time, through a variety of experiences. And so the takeaway is don't dichotomize your life. It's not as if Sunday mornings are more special than Monday mornings. It's not as if your quiet time is any more accessible to God than the rest of your day. Jesus can open a portal to you anytime he wants. And why don't we just ask God to train our eyes and train our ears to notice him at work? Surely the Lord is in this place, even though I didn't realize it. Second thing is that it seems like times of weakness are especially portals to heaven. God is strangely attracted to our brokenness. It's weird. He was attracted to Jacob's brokenness. And when you look at the way Jesus worked in the Bible and the way I see him work in lives today, he is also drawn to the weak. So I guess that begs the question is like, why do we expect other people to handle our weakness when really it's only God who's strong enough to bless our brokenness? God's waiting with open arms. He wants to embrace you, brokenness and all. And the third thing is that when a portal to heaven opens, our response is always going to be iffy. Nobody's going to get it right exactly. And amazingly, God sticks with us. Just look at all the times that the disciples disappointed Jesus. It's amazing that the guys that actually wrote the Gospels actually let this stuff get in there. because they're always screwing up, and Jesus is always disappointed with them, it seems. And yet Jesus stuck with them right till the very end. And I love Matthew's closing shout out at the end of his gospel. Jesus promises them, I will be with you always, even to the end of the age. It doesn't matter how iffy you are. Don't let the messiness of your own life be an obstacle to your response to God. A lot of people think that we're just too damaged to reach out to God. Don't believe that lie. Heaven reaches out to us. God takes the initiative with us. He invites us into partnership with Him to be a blessing to the world around us. Is God reaching out to you right now? Maybe you sense God moving closer to you. What's stopping you from making that response? Let's pray. I invite you all to stand. The first thing that Jacob did was he recognized that God is near him in the moment. Surely the Lord is in this place, and I didn't even realize it. So I just want to guide us through a time of prayer where we can follow the same steps as Jacob, and I just invite you to recognize God speaking to you in this moment. Maybe you just need to tell yourself in the quietness of your heart, this is real. I know this is happening. I know you're here for me, Lord. I'm sorry it took me this long to see it. But just take a moment and recognize God meeting you. The next step that Jacob took was he marked the encounter. Now, he set up a pillar and anointed with oil so that he would remember that particular time and place. I'm going to invite you to mark this moment with God. Maybe in a way that, I don't know, maybe you'll feel uncomfortable about this, but I'm going to invite you to do something anyway. Do something physically that you wouldn't normally do in this room. Maybe it's just stretching out your hands to heaven with hands open and ready to receive. Maybe you just need to get on your knees and kneel before God in repentance. Take whatever posture you need to mark this as a special moment between you and God. I don't care about what the person beside you thinks about what you're doing. Just mark this moment that you're having with God. And you're going to get the opportunity to sing and mark this moment in the minutes ahead. The last thing that Jacob did is he committed himself to follow God. I suspect that there are some here who've never really done that before, or maybe you have done it and you've just been running away from that commitment ever since, but maybe you're ready to come to God and make good on a commitment today. Like Jacob, you're tired, you're lonely, and you're done with living life on your own terms. If this is where you're at, you can just make a renewed commitment to follow after God with a simple prayer just like this. God, thank you for meeting me in this moment. I'm done with doing things my way. I know that in Jesus, you've provided everything that I need to be made right. I humbly receive that gift now for the first time, for the umpteenth time. And I ask you to fill me with your Spirit and give me the strength to live totally for you. Amen. Father, I thank you for meeting us in this moment. And my prayer for my family here is that iffy responses and all, that you would go with us, that you would make good on your promises, and that we would be aware and in step with your purposes in the world around us. Strengthen us and fill us, I pray.